Pop quiz, who is Mary Somerville? If you said scientist, you are technically correct, but she is so much more than that. The namesake of Somerville College was a pioneer for women. She was an astronomer, a painter, a mother, a feminist. She climbed volcanoes. She wrote books that would make Cambridge students' brains hurt. All that without going to university. Get ready for a crash course. On this episode of the Oxford Sparks Big Questions podcast, we're asking, how did Mary Somerville get on the Scottish £10 note? Hello, I'm Emily Elias, and this is the show where we seek out the brightest minds at the University of Oxford, and we make them weigh in on some tricky questions that will change the way we understand the world as we know it. And on this episode, we are talking to one researcher who has dedicated herself to all things Somerville, and she's ready to guide us through the life and times of this incredible scientist.
Hi, I'm Bridget Stenhouse. I studied maths at Somerville College, and now I'm doing my PhD at the Open University on the mathematics of Mary Somerville. She studied science in a time when not only were women discouraged from studying science, but people said that they just weren't capable of creating original thought in science. And she was like, no, you're wrong. I'm going to study these ideas, and I'm going to be a perfectly valid woman as I do it.
Bridget and I met at Somerville College at the University of Oxford, duh. And the first thing you see when you walk in is, you guessed it, Mary Somerville.
Yeah, here we have Somerville's self-portrait. But obviously, because it's a self-portrait, you can kind of see her as she saw herself. And so she sat there with her book and she's writing and she sort of got a very piercing gaze as well out of the picture. Like she's looking right at you. She's like, what science are you going to tell me today?
This portrait is way more telling than that. Mary Somerville grew up in Scotland in the late 18th century, and she was taught to do all the things that proper ladies should do. And yes, of course, that included painting. And it was a passing reference that triggered her passion for science.
She had painting lessons from Alexander Naismith when she was a child. And it's really, so she was at a painting lesson and he was teaching someone about perspective. And he's the person that said, oh, you should read Euclid, the foundation not only of perspective, but of mechanical science. And so her little ears perked up and she was like, okay, Euclid. So that's how she knew which book to ask for from her brother's tutor from a painting lesson.
And Bridget says when she got her hands on the Euclid, she couldn't put it down. Her father would have to take away her candles to force her to go to bed, and then she would just stay up all night reciting the results to herself. Her parents were not super keen on her interests.
She was growing up, her mum taught her to read the Bible, and she went to boarding school for a year, but she really hated it. And she just didn't like structured lessons. She said that when she was finally allowed to come home, she was like an animal released from a cage. And so she would just go off and explore the beaches. And that was how she learned about nature, was just sort of her own private explorations. But yeah, that was all the formal schooling she'd had. Her parents didn't believe in educating women. They thought, I mean, her dad even said, if Mary doesn't stop with this math, she'll end up in a straitjacket. Like, they were really vehemently against her education. And there's one moment her parents are complaining that she's not social enough, because obviously a woman is supposed to be, like, entertaining and have polite conversation and be attractive and blah, blah, blah. And so they told her off for being too quiet. And so she wrote in her memoir, but they made me be silent on all the subjects that I liked talking about.
At the start of the 1800s, Somerville moves to the thriving city of London, and she has kids with her first husband, Samuel Greig. But it's not all happy families.
But he was horrible. Like, he discouraged her from studying science. And I always like to say, luckily, he died. And so she was able to return to Scotland as a widow. And as a widow, she had financial freedom. She wasn't, like, she was a widow. She didn't have to jump through hoops so that she could prove she was marriageable anymore. Like, she'd done it. She had kids.
And keep in mind, this was a really exciting time for mathematics. Ideas were constantly being discussed in salons, and there is a big feud between French and British mathematicians over who was better at calculus, Newton or a German man named Leibniz. And Mary Somerville found a way to bridge the rift between these two groups. But still, being a woman and a scientist at this time was really hard, and so women had to stick together.
So Somerville corresponded with a lot of women at the time. including one scientist, Jane Marcet, who was a chemist, and her book, Conversations on Chemistry, was the standard chemistry textbook in England for a lot of the early 19th century. And it actually inspired Michael Faraday to take up chemistry, and he later did a lot of groundbreaking work in electrolysis. Beyond that, when Somerville moved to London in 1816, Jane Marcet was the person who introduced Somerville to London Scientific Society, vital for Somerville to gain access to the work that she then later wrote about, because she sort of had to find different avenues to get access to the same information, because she wasn't able to sort of be a full member of the scientific societies and things like that. And this correspondence community that she sort of built up allowed her access to the information.
And Bridget says another key person in helping Mary get her hands on research was her second husband, William Somerville.
He was incredibly supportive. He would copy out manuscripts of scientific texts that Somerville didn't otherwise have access to, and then would bring them home, like, sort of, here you go, dear, something else for you to read. And as well, when she was writing her books, he would help ferry the manuscripts back and forth. And even more, actually, so Mechanism of the Heavens, her first book, was almost not published. But thankfully, John Herschel, the astronomer, was like, no, this is really important, it needs to be published. And Dr. William Somerville is the one who sort of approached John Murray to be the publisher, and that convinced him to do it.
Yep, John Murray, who also published the works of Jane Austen. So by the age of 50, Somerville finally gets her first book published. Mechanism of the Heavens is out, and it's a hit.
The levels that she reached as an autodidact are just incredible. So when she did write Mechanism of the Heavens, the maths was very, very technical. And so she'd, on her own, she'd become this expert in this mathematics. It was used as a textbook at Cambridge by two professors. And they said it was a textbook for their most high achieving students. And she like overshot, like she was even better than the high achieving students at Cambridge.
Now, even after all of this acclaim, science was still very much a boys' club. She was made an honorary member of the Royal Astronomical Society, but was never made a full member. She climbed Mount Vesuvius after it erupted for scientific discovery. Somerville's signature was the first on a massive petition to Parliament to get women the right to vote. And after her death, Oxford named a college after her. But go ask somebody on the street who Mary Somerville is, and you'll probably get a blank stare.
It's quite common for women to sort of get written out of the history of science. So it's quite often you can read a history of the calculus, even specifically the calculus in England, and her work just isn't mentioned at all. And obviously I'm biased, but it is an important step in that story.
So in February 2016, it was time to write Mary Somerville back into history. The Royal Bank of Scotland decided to hold a Facebook vote on who deserved a spot on the £10 note, and Mary Somerville made it to the top three.
So obviously Somerville College immediately got behind this, and there was quite a big push. A lot of the students got involved, and Somerville was winning. It was the last day. She had, I think, over 4,000 votes, which was just miles more than either of the other two people. Thank goodness I went to check eight hours before the deadline, and suddenly Thomas Telford had gone up by like 4,000 votes.
So Bridget did what I think Mary Somerville would have done if she had a high-speed internet connection. She canvassed strangers on Facebook for votes.
So I sat there for the whole 8 hours, like messaging people I hadn't spoken to in years, being like, so, wanna like this picture on Facebook for me? Trying to convince people. There's quite a few student Facebook groups based around feminism. So I was going on those being like, hey guys, wanna get a woman on a £10 note? But it was so much more than that, because it wasn't like a token woman. It was, do you wanna get this scientist who, for reasons of gender, has been underappreciated on a £10 note? Like, what an amazing way to give her the recognition that she deserves.
The contest closed and Bridget didn't do it. She was like 3,500 votes shy, and RBS, they looked into it, and they realized that all of these likes came from one specific bot in Asia. And they discounted those votes, and Somerville got the £10 note.
And there were celebrations. I was very overjoyed. And because she was such a strong advocate for education for women, I think she'd be really proud that, like, Somerville College exists. And now, like, her little face is going to be on the £10 note. So I can just imagine little girls growing up in Scotland and they don't even question whether they can be a scientist. Like, what a stupid question. Like, there's literally one on the money. Like, of course they can be a scientist, which I really like.
So next time you're in Scotland and you pick up £10, show the lady on the back some respect.
When she was in her 80s and a comet was coming past Earth, and she rode out into the middle of a lake in the middle of the night to watch this comet fly past. And I just thought the imagery was really beautiful, and that sort of passion for being involved in nature and finding out more about what makes these things happen was very inspirational.
This podcast was brought to you by Oxford Sparks for the University of Oxford, with music by John Lyons, Daniel Vesey, and Olga Scotland. And a special thanks to Bridget Stenhouse and everybody who voted for Mary Somerville. Please tell us what you think about this podcast. You can find us on Facebook. You can go to Twitter. We are at Oxford Sparks. And of course, we have a website, oxfordsparks.ox.ac.uk. I'm Emily Elias. Bye for now.